Blog Talk Radio.
An old Cherokee is teaching his grandson about life. He tells the boy, "There's a fight that's going on inside me, and it's a terrible fight. This fight is between two wolves. Now, one wolf is evil. It is anger, envy, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other wolf, however, is good. This wolf is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, truth, compassion, and faith. Now, this same fight is going on inside you," he tells the grandson, "and inside every other person, too." The grandson sat there, thought about it for a minute, and he asked the grandfather, "Well, grandfather, which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee just simply replied, "It's the wolf you feed."
Yeah.
Hey, hey, and hey. Good evening, good afternoon, or good morning. It all just depends on what part of the world you're listening. Welcome. Bienvenidos, que tal? Namaste, oki, and welcome. Welcome, welcome, welcome to another episode of the Greenhouse Effects Radio Show. My name is Will Green, holding down one half of our hosts and duties live every Monday and Wednesday, 7 p.m. Central Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio. Holding down the other half of our hosts and duties, some call him the Lions Historian, some just call him Punk. I call him my best friend, my dad, Bill Green. What's happening, Daddy-o? What's going on, man?
What's up, Wilfredo? How you doing, man?
Yeah, I'm great, man.
Yeah, we sound happy and everything right now. Well, folks could have heard us 10 minutes ago. And I apologize, man. I don't know why I got so despondent or whatever I got. You know, I think you know, there's no anticipating the mood of someone who's growing old. So anyway, how you doing,
cool.
Man? Have you recovered from my onslaught? He's fine.
Absolutely.
Like,
absolutely, man. You know, once that lady comes on and I hear those guys singing and hear Petey Green tell you to wake up, man, you got no choice but to, you know,
yeah,
take
in
it
case
off.
Y'all don't know what he's referring to, that lady is the voice of Blog Talk Radio. It says, your show will be starting in 5 seconds. 4, 3, 2. Welcome to Black Talk. That's Black Talk Radio.
Black Talk Radio, right?
That's what we ought to call it. It's Black Talk Radio. We should call it Black Talk Radio.
Let me write that.
But anyway, you know, it's like, all right, whatever issues we got, time to kick them to the side because it's time to get busy, you know. So, hey, man, thank you for your patience. I really, you don't know,
man,
how much I appreciate it, man.
It's showtime.
It's showtime. Shake those hands and show them teeth. Right on, man. Yeah, so let me, because I know we want to try to cover a few things tonight, emotional as some of them are. Let me step out the way, man, and let you do your diligence.
Well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you probably already heard me say, let me write this down. So, you know, there may be some things you might pick up from our show every once in a while.
Amen.
You know, we'd like to encourage you all before we get going to take a moment, grab a pen and pad, a pencil and paper, a post-it note, a back of a napkin, whatever you got, or an envelope.
A napkin.
We just want to make sure if you have any questions, we make sure you write them down. If you have any comments, something you want to share with the audience, or again, something you may pick up from Dad and I's discussion throughout the night, or from another caller. So grab something to write with. Black Talk Radio, I like that. We have different ways of engagement on our live shows Mondays and Wednesdays on the Blog Talk Radio site, blogtalkradio.com/thegreenhousefx, the letter FX. With your free Blog Talk Radio profile, you can access our chat room and engage with Dad and I that way. Or you can call in our number here. I'm sure by now you've got a pen and paper handy. Number here is 516-453-6094. I'll say it twice, 516-453-6094. And occasionally I might check Facebook if you comment on the event page as well. So that was just a quick reminder from Dad and I before we get going.
My man. Yeah. See, Arlene has tuned in the chat room. What's up,
Artie?
Right. Good to see you out there in the chat room. Yeah.
Yep.
And Adam's kind of bouncing around in and out. You know, sometimes, you know, Black Talk Radio. No, that's Blog Talk Radio, though. That ain't us. That's the technical side of the podcast. It doesn't always give us 100% power, you know, as far as transmission. So we apologize for that, as always.
Yeah.
So where do we want to kick it off, or you know, like, do we need to remind any and everybody who might be interested in making a comment to not wait for us to say, okay, now's the time to call in with your comments? Do we need to say that?
Yeah. And you know, and I forgot to mention pressing the one button. If you call in and listen on your phone, and you want to comment or share anything like that, if you press one on your keypad there, it'll put your number in the queue. We'll see a little hand that says, I want to come in, you know, and we'll bring you in as soon as we can. You can engage with us that way. But don't wait on us to say, our phone lines are now open. The phone line is open. And those of you all that are listening probably have heard Dad and I on other shows before. And you know how fast these hours can go. You know how easy, Dad, I can use 1,000 words because 100 don't do. So just hit that button and come on in. We'll get you in. Yeah, but I don't know. You know, I've been kind of up and down in my emotions, you know, dealing with some shadow energy and, you know, personal stuff, getting older, as you say, and, you know, looking at all these things that's happening out here. I mean, it's like you can just put news on the board on your wall and just take a dart. You know, sometimes it's just throw some darts and see what you hit. You know, a lot of
right
things have, you know, some things have similar context and some things are ridiculous. Like, why are we even wasting our energy on it? You know, like the Lakers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. The Lakers, man.
You know,
yeah.
You know, recently there was a coming back to something that happened last year, back in April of 2021. We mentioned in one of our shows Dante Wright, who was killed in a motor stop in Minnesota. And just recently, just a few days ago, the officer that mistakenly killed Dante Wright was sentenced to a 2-year sentence for being found guilty of manslaughter, first and second degree manslaughter. Now, it's not exactly 24 months. We say it's a 2-year sentence, but it's I'm trying to remember. I didn't write down the exactly how it was broken down.
Yeah, 16 months and 6 months probation, and then
right.
Credit for time already served. Yes,
yeah. Right, supervised and all that. Thank you, appreciate that.
Yeah.
So that's, you know, I know that's been the most recent thing that's, you know, kind of brought back some wounds of the trauma and other things that we've been just talking about on our shows and noticing a few of the things that are happening to black Americans in America. So for those of you who don't recall what happened, it's okay, Dad, if I just, you know, review what happened last year?
Hey, man, this is your time. Yeah, absolutely.
So, like I said, I believe it was April 4th, 2021, police pulled over Dante Wright because he had an expired license tag and an air freshener hanging in the rearview mirror, which was a violation where they were, Brooklyn Center, Minnesota. But come to find out, there was a warrant for Dante's arrest because he failed to appear in court for a weapons charge. So they tried to, you know, detain him, but he got away and ran back to his car. And in the process of them trying to get him out of the car, Kim Potter grabbed her 9mm handgun instead of her taser and shot Dante Wright and killed him. So this trial went on for about 2 weeks. And, you know, Potter stopped, you know, on the stand talking about the shooting. It was very apologetic for what happened. You know, the trial centered around questions of whether she, you know, she should have recognized she was holding a heavier weapon. And a handgun, a 9mm, is a lot heavier than the taser. Plus the handling, the gripping itself is different too. So she should have, you know, the question is, she should have recognized that she had the heavier gun. And the other question is whether, she, you know, should she have even drawn the weapon at all? So in this trial, the state recommended a sentence roughly about 7 years for first degree manslaughter and 4 years for the second degree charge. Now, she's been on the force for 26 years. You know, she's had a lot of training and trained officers about, you know, not making the mistake of using your 9mm instead of the taser, which was crazy ironic, right? But she made the mistake.
Yeah, you think. All right.
26 years, and she trained other people, you know. So.
All right.
So the, you know, the defense team argued, you know, here we go again, where the person who's dead has to justify their death. You know, they argued that Wright caused his own death by ignoring the police officers and attempting to escape. He killed himself. And you know, Potter admitted she made a mistake, but her team said that she should be held liable. Quote, a mistake is not a crime. In the walk of life, nobody's perfect. Everyone makes mistakes. That's what they said. That was their, you know, justification for killing this black man, you know, making this mistake. So, you know, it's like, here we go. She gets not really 2 years, time served and all this stuff. And, I mean, people are serving quadruple time for, you know, marijuana, you know, still, you know, but there still doesn't seem to be some kind of, I don't know, I don't want to say equal accountability, but I mean, it just seems like sometimes the rules are made different, you know, but that's just my personal opinion. So anyway, so that was, you know, just a review of what happened. And like I said, a couple of days ago, she was sentenced to a 2-year sentence and broke down, like you said, that time served and she'll be supervised. And it's, you know, it's really a joke. I mean, in my opinion, it's a joke, you know. So I don't, you know, what, was there something I was missing, something more you wanted to add to?
Well, I don't think there's anything you're missing. You know, I mean, you're covering what you said you were going to do. You covered the highlights of, you know, what happened last year and the highlights of the hearing. And, you know, your opinion is a valid point. It doesn't require agreement or disagreement. You know, I mean, like, you know, anything we talk about is going to be bracketed, you know, between or around our opinions, you and I. We can't very well, you know, edit that out of the issues at hand, especially this ongoing thing, you know. And you know, Adam in the chat room, you know, made a comment, you know, well, yeah, a comment bracketed with, I guess my word for the night's going to be bracketed, with question marks, like 26 years on the force, don't know the difference between a gun and a taser. And, you know, the irony is what you noted, man. You know, you train people not to make the very mistakes you made. And we're not talking about somebody who's just stepped on the block. You know, we're talking about somebody who's been out there for 26 years and, you know, not working in a high – well, now here's where my opinion comes in. Not working in a high-stress, high-volume crime territory like, let's say, Minneapolis or – you know, Chicago or whatever, you know, big city issues. You know, we're talking about, you know, Brooklyn Center, you know, Minnesota, which I'm guessing is like a suburb of Minneapolis. You know, I'm guessing that. And I didn't do my due diligence to find out what the crime rates are and all that. But my opinion is I'm betting that it's not like you're under a whole lot of stress and you're at the end of your rope. It's like a 26-year veteran who's pretty much well conditioned for the circumstances of the hood and has the feel for it. You would think 26 years of conditioning would just kick in instinct. You know, so we could get technical and we could talk about the difference of drawing a 9mm as a point as opposed to drawing a taser. Taser's on her left side, gun's on her right side. So how does a 26-year veteran not have that memorized? You know, how do you, you know, instinctively go for the heavier weapon, as you pointed out, that's on your right side, and not know the difference between the two, and you're carrying them for 26 years or however long taser's been on the force, but you've at least been carrying the 9mm for 26 years. And right. Training people. So, you know, how does accident work into that? You know, and unfortunately, how do you weigh accident? You know, how do you know what's planned? You know, how do you know what's an honest mistake or, you know, some devilry? I mean, how do you know? You know, I mean, look, Minneapolis has been under the gun anyway for the past couple of years. if not long, well, longer than that, but definitely in the eye of the nation, you know, George Floyd, and you know, and brother, I forget his name, the cop who, you know, mistakenly killed a white woman who's still doing time, you know, and yeah, you know, it's the issues at hand have to play at some point a part in the decisions that the police force makes. And I think we made a point last week that some of these things that happen aren't caused by the public, they're caused by the police. And then we have to wrestle with the outcome. You make that point, and you've made it several times, that the dead victim, you know, has to justify the crime. How does the dead victim do that? Well, if you listen to the judge, man, that was the most painful thing. That was the most painful thing I ever listened to. Listening to this judge's rationale and how she came about making this decision and how she delivered this sentence. You know, man, if I had money, you know, I would have taken my TV and just threw it out the window, ran outside and jumped up and down on it, screaming, bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. But I don't have money. So I just had to leave the TV where it was, you know, not break the window, and just sit in my seat yelling, bullshit, bullshit, bullshit. And y'all just have to excuse my language, you know, but this is an adult talk show, and sometimes my tongue just gets ahead of me. So before you start throwing, you know, religious barbs my way, understand I'm fully conscious of what I'm saying, and I do all my absolutions after the show is over. So I'm apologizing ahead of time. But sometimes there's no other way to serve up bullshit but to acknowledge that it's bullshit.
No, you know, we gave our PSA that this was going to be a little emotional tonight anyway. You know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, nah, it'll be okay. You know, but now just going over it out loud, you know, it's like, oh, shit. you know, this is starting to, you know, trigger stuff. Let me catch my breath here. You know,
comment. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, and I saw Artie's comment also, but for me sometimes I'm not even looking at. I shouldn't say I'm not looking at the whole thing of being a black person that got killed by a white officer. It's just, you know, if you don't look at race, you'd be like, man, that's quite a coincidence. That keeps happening, you know, to the point you'd be scratching your head like, I don't know. That just doesn't seem right. But my thing is about my issue and when my opinions kind of just start jumping out is about the accountability piece, you know, being responsible for carrying these weapons, being responsible for other people's lives, and not just cutting down people because you fear for your life. I mean, you're a police officer. It's what you do. You run to the fire every day. You know, you should be scared for your life, but that doesn't justify you just automatically shooting people just because you're scared. You know, there should be, you know, you've taken a life. You made a mistake. 26, almost 30 years. You know, I mean, in what profession would that be looked at like something that's just, oh, yeah, it's no big deal. But when it comes to protecting and serving, I just have some issues with just basic life. But people don't have to die by them. So, but go ahead and read Artie's comment, because it's very...
Well, you know, okay, but at the same time, I want to support the comments you're making. And sometimes the words are difficult to articulate in some kind of, you know, rhythm, because the feelings sometimes get in the way of articulation. So I'm feeling you're struggling with the words, you know. Times like this, if we're out on the corner, we don't worry about the words. So we say things that we aren't going to say on the show, you know, just to convey the raw dog feelings, you know, and that's what we do, you know, it brings out the testosterone in men like us, you know, and it is a different, you know, protect and serve. I mean, protect and serve who? And that's, to me, where the argument should always be. Who are we protecting and serving right now? You know, and as far as I'm concerned, to protect and serve was for the officer herself. And pretty much echoed by the way the judge came up with her ruling. And I love how the civil rights attorney, Ben Crump, put it. You know, yeah. And I'm just going to quote what he said, if you don't mind. He said, there are black people in prison. This is the point you were making. There are black people in prison serving greater time for selling marijuana, which is legal in most states, than this police officer got for killing this young black man. And then Brother Crump also added, the judge's comments, and this is what, you know, man, the judge's comments at sentencing showed a clear absence of compassion for the victim in this tragedy and were devastating for the family. A Judge Chu's comments about Potter, meaning the police officer, resembled those of a job recommendation and not that of a senseless and preventable death of a promising life. You know, I mean, and if you listen to Judge Chu, which I know a lot of people didn't, and listening to her, not taking an account of somebody who had heard her and then given their, you know, their point of, or their interpretation of what she was saying. That's, you know, listening to how she was justifying the mistake, you know, and not criminalizing the act, you know, and that, you know, man, and even within the guidelines of what she had to use based on what is dictated by their court of law in that state, you know, which the recommendation is 7 years, that still allows the judge, but to make, you know, to make a decision to maybe even increase the time, she chose to reduce the time because of the compassion pleas, you know, by the perpetrator. And acknowledging, you know, the pain that she heard from the victim's mother, but still clearly siding with the with the passionate plea of forgiveness by the perpetrator, and not hearing the sorrow, you know, of the mother, you know, who said, man, it just got me when she said it, you know, my son has been killed twice, you know, once by the officer and now again by the courts. You know, man, that's just devastating. You know, and we now in 3 short weeks, we've dealt with the outcome of a court decision for the slaying of a young brother and the slaying of a young brother that, whose case is yet to be heard by mass SWAT teams who stepped into his friend's crib, wasn't even his crib, while he was asleep on the couch, you know, and started screaming at him and gave him 9 seconds to decide how he was going to die. You know, three weeks of dealing with these, which, you know, I wish I could say extreme, but they're the same thing. And they've been the same thing. You know, I don't care about where a boot is on a brother's neck. I don't care about where a gunshot goes in the back of a naked brother running down the street who has mental issues. I don't care about how you mow down a dude who you tried to tase and he was running toward his home base and threw your taser back at you. And I don't mean to laugh as if this is funny, and chased him and then just shot him down knowing where he was running to. You know, but this judge, these situations, and justified saying that these are the extremes and not this situation here. You know, and even to the point of using a Barack Obama quote, you know, to justify the importance of people staying cool. Yeah, if I had some money, I would have destroyed my TV. You know, I would have destroyed this part of the house that I live in, but I ain't got the money to show the truth. Depth of my rage, and then to be judged by my rage and not the cause. You know, those are the words I heard you saying, man. You know, those are the words I heard you you know, fighting to restrain yourself from just going off. Because we're supposed to be objective, right? We're supposed to be hosts of a black talk show, you know, that invites everybody's comments, you know, not just black folks. But at the same time, be, and you're much better at this than I am, listener friendly. And you do a much better job at being the calm voice in the eye of the storm than I do. And I, man, I'm so glad you're here with me, brother. I probably, you know, I don't even want to think about the words I would have used, you know, to truly display my anger. But that last sentence, Judge Chu's comments about Potter resembled those of a job recommendation and not that of a senseless and preventable death of a promising life, man. You know, and unfortunately, that's not going to be the quote that we're going to hear. You know, we're going to hear Obama's quote. You know, we're going to hear that Judge Chu's impassioned sentence was also, you know, like expressed through tears.
Yeah.
That, you know, you have to decide for yourself who those tears were for, the perpetrator or the victim. You know, I'm leaning toward the perpetrator. And I say that because of the way the sentence went down. You know,
and how she talked about the case itself. You know, on one hand, a young man was killed. On the other, a respected 26-year police officer made a tragic error. You know, it's just we'll hear how she talked about Dante and his family. You know, how she was sad for their loss, and then when she talks about the Potter family and this officer honorably served the community, respected officer, you know, went above and beyond the call of duty. You know, she did all these things. And then she flips it with the Obama quote at the end, walking in other people's shoes, you know. So, yeah, it's all that word play and stuff, you know. To me,
I just want, you know, because you're saying what I'm saying too. You know, and we both are saying and paraphrasing what the civil rights attorney said. Judge Chu's comments about Potter resembled those of a job recommendation. You know, you just said it. You know, that resembles, you know, someone co-signing for a job recommendation. Talked about the officer's career. Talked about the years served. Talked about even, you know, her family, you know, talked about all the glowing. It was almost like saying, surely y'all would never want to think that this was premeditated. Surely you wouldn't consider that this officer had absolutely no qualms about mowing down another black life. Surely you would not allow yourselves to assume such a thing by the time I finish telling you about her wonderful and glowing career. Surely you would not let your anger and rage get to that point of judgment. That's what you call a job recommendation, man. You know, so, you know, I don't know. I mean, there's the chat room is blazing.
So you mentioned
that
you mentioned,
going at it, man.
Yeah. You mentioned, let's hit the chat room and then we can open up the
bar. Right. Yeah.
So what were you saying?
Yeah.
Artie said
Artie said black people look at institutional racism every day and have to watch how our humanity is undervaluated, ignored, and murdered just because. You know, this reality is terrorism against us time and time again. Their legal system is, well, you know, not justice, but just us. You know, and Artie said some more. She said, the sickness of this behavior is what is the norm for white people in their thinking. Blaming the victims is not a new story. Amen. And you want to take Adam's comments, man?
Yeah. Adam mentioned the two kids in the New Jersey Mall, treatment of the white kid who was reportedly the bully and the black kid. What do you know what happened in the
No, that's That's an Adam mystery there. I'm sure we'll hear about it.
Okay. Okay, that's the segue to when we bring him in then. Okay.
Yeah. And he said,
I bet she still get her pension, you know, when she gets out of jail. That's a good question. We're gonna have to look that up. You know, like, is she still getting pension and still getting paid? You know, because it is just manslaughter, so maybe, you know, she might still get some of her pension out of it. It's crazy how they still get paid, you know, after all this stuff. But anyway, that's another topic for another night.
Yeah, for another night, you know, and you know, it would be easy, of course, just to, you know, I don't know, you want to bring folks in?
We can start with 469-834, area code 469-834. Sorry about that. Okay, here we go. All right. Hey, good evening. I think I know who this
is. Hey!
There he is.
Yes,
there
sir.
He is.
Sound like JP.
What's up? What's
yes,
up,
sir. Yes,
Pastor?
Yes, sir. Good evening.
Man, I only get in the queue when, you know, I guess the topic kind of, something said kind of like, kind of pulls me out of the darkness, you know, where I can kind of, you know, speak just kind of my experience on the matter. First of all, I did have a question, though. So did she shoot the brother one time?
Yeah, through the heart.
Yeah.
One time through the heart.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, so, they train on center mass. So regardless, it's a taser or a firearm, they trained on the chest and the back.
Okay. So one thing I did learn that they're trained on too, and the way I learned it was, so I guess 2012, they tasered my daddy twice on the dash cam, and he had to be at least 56 years old. He had my little sister in the vehicle with him, and she had to be every bit of she probably had to be she had to be about 4 years old, maybe. Yeah, about four. And you can kind of hear her in the background, you know, screaming, "I want my daddy! I want my daddy!" But they got it on dash cam. They got it on dash cam. So I learned through the Eternal Affairs that they are trained to create space. And that's what the Eternal Affairs investigator kept asking the officers, like, "Hey, you know, y'all didn't look like y'all was creating any space. Y'all was, you know, aggressively, you know, pursuing." You know what I'm saying? Like, my daddy wasn't running or anything. He parked in the neighbor's driveway, and he was just trying to walk in the house. And I'm gonna be honest, he had half ounce of weed, a little under an ounce of weed on him. You know what I'm saying? He wasn't fully obeying, you know, the officers where they was, you know, kind of barking, you know, directions at him, you know. But again, 56-year-old man, they tasered him twice, and they, you know, kneed him, elbowed him, you know, they banged him up pretty good. I'm more so, you know, everybody got to be held accountable for their actions. But when I was a little child, I conducted myself kind of based on the consequences. You know, so if I could, get a verbal warning for, you know, my misconduct, then, you know, that's something I can live with. But if I knew that my misconduct was going to come with, you know, physical consequences, consequences that, even consequences that, you know, meant, you know, loss of privileges, which that never was the case in my household. It was physical, and I'm not like talking about a belt neither. We missed that. Yeah, we missed that stage. We graduated to, you know, hands upside the head, you know. So
combat.
I really blame, you know, the powers that be, because I mean, if I can kill someone and get away with it, with like the two officers that tased my daddy, they got like, you know, like a day off with no pay, you know. And come to find out later that one of those same officers was involved with my daddy's childhood friend, that they killed him like 2 years before. They said he jumped on the taser, they hogtied and pulled his arm out of socket, and he died, you know, in the ambulance on the way to the hospital. And he was just at, you know, Walgreens or CVS, you know, a psych patient, but he was just trying to get his medicine. And I had known him all my life, so he wasn't an aggressive, like, psych patient. He just liked to snickle and grin, you know, and he became a psych patient because he was a veteran of the war. So he was PTSD or something, you know. But he wasn't aggressive. He don't want no problems. He not gonna, you know, jump on no taser or attack no officers. You know, I knew the guy, you know, so but mind you, they pulled a man's arm out of socket, he died on the way to the hospital. No, you know, I read all the reports from the CVS, and you know, it was everybody's word. But it was no cameras. You know what I'm saying? I know CVS has cameras, but in this investigative report, there's no mention of any footage that was ever pulled. But the worker did say that they, you know, physically, you know, kneed him in the head or elbowed him in the head. Or all officers said that they didn't make no physical contact with the man's head. But the employee said something different, and again, no cameras. And if my daddy hadn't been on the dash cam, there would have been another situation.
Yeah,
and
that's right.
I hate to admit that, you know, we've been experiencing this, you know, 300, 400 years. So it's really shame on us for expecting anything different, you know.
Yeah, amen. Yeah, Will and I. Well, I don't know. Maybe I better not say this a lot. Ah, what the hell? I'm old enough now. I didn't live long enough. you know. It's almost like, not almost like, if the time is here for the people to reckon with what you just said, Jay Pastor, you know, enough time now should have expired for us to be up at arms. You know, it, we're not like our South African brothers and sisters, you know, who had nothing, you know, therefore had nothing to lose. You know, we're a people who wrestle with, is it worth it based on what I stand to lose? Now, I'm talking about life. I'm talking about possession, position even, title. You know, is it worth it to, you know, raise up, or is it still an adequate response to be not by any means necessary, but by any peaceful means necessary? Has the time come not to wait for, you know, the white supremacists, you know, who are arguing with the rest of white society about the issues that they feel are relevant to them? Maybe, you know, and therefore threatening civil war, maybe we need to take up the banner of what our rights are, and maybe consider our own active response of revolt. You know, the slaves of American society, you know, had nothing to lose. So don't make any mistake about it. There were more revolts than just Nat Turner, and there were more revolts than that was fueled by John Brown, you know, many, there were many, many slave revolts, you know. So maybe since the continuous treatment is that of slaves, you know, maybe it is time for us to act as slaves with nothing to lose. Yeah, and you know, maybe even the threat of it would be enough. You know, like we hear about, you know, these white supremacists who've been trained in the armed service and therefore, you know, are a threat to the nation, that they have these skilled, you know, abilities. Well, the brunt of the armed forces has always been men and women of color. And I remember when I was in the service, the backbone were black men who had three stripes, the NCOs. So don't tell me nothing about, you know, who's trained and who isn't. You know, I don't know. I've never been one to advocate having a firearm. You know, I always thought have one that's going to attract one.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's something you said, Jay Pastor, that just now jarred me to some, and I think Artie would agree with this, you know, hating to give away her age like that. But what, there was never a, I mean, we had, you know, we, you know, stop and frisk and, you know, we, you know, per curfew violation, be thrown in the back of a squad car, taken to the station, you know, but, you know, there was never a fear. And maybe this was just the middle class northern, you know, city boys experience. But there was a fear of punishment. There was a fear of getting caught. There was a fear of retribution at home, whatever. But there wasn't a real fear of the police shooting us as teenagers. I mean, we didn't have that. And believe me, I did more than my share of foolishness. But there was never a fear of what we were doing would be met with armed violence. You know, and it's hard for me to understand until I think about it, you know, and think about it realistically. You can talk, people can talk all they want about the importance of training in the police force. Yeah, and sensitivity training or whatever. Okay, maybe so. You know, restraint, all that. Okay. But, you know, unless there's a better screening of who you hire, you know, if you take a racist and you teach him or her all the things about restraint, all the things about distance, all the things about the use of a weapon, you're just going to have a well-trained racist. You know, and I think until something jars us into the reality of the severity of what it is to be at risk in this country that has lulled itself to sleep, you know, about what is happening to black people, I think it's something we're going to have to do to shake them up. I'm not talking about good trouble, you know. I'm talking about trouble, you know. But that's just me. Yeah. So can we delete archive shows, man?
We'll have to figure out a way to do some editing. I don't know. Like, I don't know. We just lost part of the tape, you know. But like I said, you know, we would have, you know, we would have a lot to lose. You know, individually as a group, it's like, how much are you really willing to give up? You know, and probably not since Fred Hampton, you know, had that mentality. You know, since the move.
Yeah. Well. You know, we can go down the list. The bottom line is that in the 60s and on through the 70s, my generation showed, you know, its stripes, showed its reaction to, you know, violent upheaval, you know, and we, in so many ways, kowtowed, you know, it did, it, you know, like people can choose to ignore American history all at once, but American history has showed time and time again that if it's concerned about its own safety, it knows exactly what to do to deal with the issue. You know, it's shown it with the Indians, Native, Indigenous people. You know, it showed it with, you know, the handling of civil rights workers, you know, the freedom riders. It showed it with black people in the 50s and 60s that will sick dogs on you, will put hose on you, and will do it with the force in the military. You know, we showed it with Fred Hampton and Mark Clark, but we showed it more broadly even with the Black Panther Party itself. You know, there was a hit put out, you know, a contract put out on the Panthers. I'm using my own language, you know, maybe really it was. But, you know, America knows how to deal violently with anything, any of, you know, who can forget the convention of the 60s in Chicago where Mayor Daley gave an order, shoot to kill.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, so, you know, America has always shown, you know, I mean, look what it did to its own. Kennedy, both Kennedy, well, two of them, you know, didn't hesitate, therefore, with King, you know, probably had much to do with the assassination of Malcolm X. You know, who knows what the real plot was against King or Medgar Evers or the numbers of those who, you know, whose graveyards are unmarked as much as a cow that falls dead in the pasture. You know, wow, I'm sorry. I'm hearing myself now. I'm really tripping.
No, man. You're good. I'm sorry. What are you saying?
And because, and I'm going to back off of this, my feeling is because it's not a constant outlet, like there's no news medium like MSNBC or shucks, too late now. I said it, Fox, you know, CNN, you know, how come black folks can't have their Fox? Fox says whatever the hell it wants to say, but it's called entertainment even, so they can't be sued for, you know, a breach of news. You know, why can't black folks have a station like that, a station that just expresses all of our anger and our rage and use different mediums, different circumstances, different headlines to justify our rage? You know, why are we so afraid of our rage? I don't have an answer for that.
And not even just the rage, but just an honest opinion, just a true, honest opinion, an expression of emotion without being labeled, a killjoy or a troublemaker, since you mentioned making trouble earlier, you know? I mean, because they can do it in all their different ways, you know? I mean, that's why not? Why can't we? But we end up looking like, oh, well, you know, these guys, you know, they're troublemakers and they don't care about nothing but their own agenda or something like that, you know?
Yeah, well, see, that's why you and I are a pair, because you are always the calm voice. Thank you.
I'm
Pastor. You know,
I'm reminded of.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm reminded of what happened when they stormed the whatever building that was in D.C. You know,
right?
Stormed these people's building. You know what I'm saying? But they.
Yeah.
They wasn't labeled. I bet you if we would have stormed anywhere, you know, we'd have been laid out in the front lawn. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's.
Yeah.
I mean, it's.
That's
it's,
right.
It's a harsh,
that's right.
It's a harsh reality, man. You know, it's a harsh reality.
Yeah. But at the same time, if we had done that, you know, history would have recorded why. You know, and then. People can draw their own conclusions and make up their own minds about the justification of it. You know, this situation, however, is one that is one half being justified by the very system, you know, that condemns anybody else behaving that way. So, you know, it's the game. It's the game of American society, and it's shown its willingness to partake in violent upheaval any chance it gets against its own, you know, but we're not its own. You know, there's been a war declared, an unofficial war, I guess we can say, although statistics speak for himself, you know, an unofficial war that has been declared against black people since the emancipation. You know, so, you know, like, we're still slaves as far as American justice is concerned. And, you know, we're the only ones treated like that. You know, and Will, you started out talking about the discrepancies with how, you know, one person is treated one way, like you said, marijuana, you know, use, where it's legal in most states now, and somebody mows down a young brother for what? I mean, okay, he's got a warrant. He's running from the law. But you're the law. You know who he is. Where is he going to go? What
I mean,
gonna,
right.
You got
right.
You know you got him. You know, how far can he run?
Just get
you
back
know,
in
where
your
can he
follow.
Go?
Right.
He's running
right.
back
he
to his
nowhere.
Ride. Let him get in this ride. Follow him where he's going. I mean, you know.
I'm sorry, Dad. Going back to that, and JP, you made a point about that space. You know, they don't talk about how the other officer, there was another officer that was in the car, in the window or something like that. I mean, it was not a controlled situation in the first place, let alone she pulled out the wrong weapon. But there was an officer, and they even used that to justify, well, it was okay that she killed him, because if Dante Wright had pulled off in his car, then the police officer that was in the window could have been killed or severely hurt, you know. So,
yeah.
And, we don't hear about that a lot with this case.
Yeah.
The whole point was that it wasn't controlled, and let him go.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to get this bad, but anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you go right on down the line, you know. All right. So George Floyd had a $20 counterfeit bill. Let's say that's right. Okay. Where is he going to go? Yeah, man. Yeah, we go. Anyway, I'm tripping all the way. Artie, I don't know. You want to bring Adam in, man? Because he's probably going crazy. Don't go nowhere,
yeah,
J-Pastor. Stay right where you are, man.
Yeah, we've been communicating on the chat room. Just hitting back Artie real quick. Artie, and I'm not going to read the whole thing.
Right.
So please forgive me.
Yeah, but please read that, because I've been looking at that show and I've been asking myself if I have the tolerance to watch it. Yes, yeah, so go on.
Oh, the show that you said she just started looking at, the Showtime show? That's what you're talking about?
Yeah,
she said that she was just started looking at this program on Showtime. Everything's going to be all white. She said, check it out if you have Showtime. This is a documentary in parts on how people of color are viewing white Americans and the history of whiteness in this country.
Yeah.
So check that out. And earlier she mentioned... and we'll bring Adam in. Actually, Adam, I'm going to unmute you now, but just give me a second. She mentioned how, you know, in the early years with, you know, your parents, my grandparents, great-grandparents, you know, they were being killed a lot, being raised
mm-hmm.
in the South, and the whole migration
mm-hmm.
came up to the North, and then that whole mentality mm-hmm. kind of came up from the South up to the North. You know, and it was just going back to what you were saying earlier, but you know, you say your generation kowtow, but I think your generation kowtow because it was concerned about my generation and about my son's generation and everybody else's generation. So, you know, because we didn't at the time we didn't want how things were happening in the South to come up here, but now it's just everywhere. It doesn't, at this point it doesn't really matter. Like you said, in one show, you know, you busted out the question in one show, what else do you want? What else can we do?
Yeah,
you know, I'm sorry, but I don't know what else we can do. What else do you need? You know, and here we are, you know.
Yeah. It's a hard thing to clearly define the philosophy of the generations of black folks. You know, I'm thankful for my relationship with you and Jay Pastor and Adam and, you know, my nephews, you know, in that we can at least cross generationally have a reasonable debate on the issues at hand.
Mm-hmm.
However, I feel privileged for that. I feel like the exception and not the rule. I just, even within families, I don't think the debate is very live. You know, I think instead it's more of a concern for safety. And I think that concern for safety, I don't know if it really fueled our protective tendencies toward, you know, like your generation. I think there was a whole other issue there. You know, I think what we wanted was that your generation have the fruits of privilege, to the point that where we spoiled y'all's asses. You know,
and we spoiled the next generation too. Yeah.
You know, and but the conversation, you know, the conversation has been lost, you know, over the, you know, generational span of things. You know, we were fortunate, my generation was, that we had the 60s and 70s. That was our platform. You know, everything about American society caved in right in that hub, you know, whether it was the National Organization of Women, whether it was, you know, the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, whether it was the, you know, the church founded by, you know, Martin Luther King Sr., you know, whether it was the movements of the Muslims called Black Muslims by the media, you know, whether it was the birth of the Black Panther Party, whether it was the heroes of the community like Russell Meeks or, you know, Al Raby or those, you know, like in Chicago who did an active part in bringing Harold Washington back to the fold. You know, whatever it was, you know, it was fueled by the war against the war, you know, bring him home now, you know, the war against Nixon that got him finally, you know, kicked out of him and Agnew, you know, kicked out of office, you know, the themes of true civil rights, you know, I mean, even if it took a minute, like the Kennedys didn't jump at the chance to desegregate schools in the South, but they gradually would pull toward the truth of righteousness. You know, LBJ, for the longest part, referred to Black people as niggers, you know, and he did it subconsciously. It was how he talked. But he was finally drawn into the reality of civil rights by King and associates. You know, so, you know, that conversation is what's been lost. You know, we just don't have that conversation anymore. It's about, you know, it's about fashion. It's about possessions. It's about, you know, owning my block. I don't know.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
it's
like what Ray said was sexy. The new generation would say, you know, what's the drip? You know, what's cool? What's hip? You know.
Had our language too. We had our language too. You know, I mean, you know, like all languages are born from a language. You know, and we had our words. We had our codes. They had. You know, I mean, like, but there's still some realities that exist that I still see. I can go anywhere in this nation, and I can be walking down, for the most part, 95% of the time, I can be walking down any aisle of any store in way back Georgia. And if I see a brother, and even sometimes a sister, but almost guaranteed a brother walking by, I can say, "What's up, bro?" And he's going to say, "Hey, how you doing?" Or whatever. It's like, we don't have any problem acknowledging each other's presence at times like that. It's almost like we're saying, "Yeah, we still here."
We're here. Yeah.
You know, yeah. So let me, you know, I mean, I see what Artie's saying, and I see what, you know, like Artie's saying, you know, Blog Talk Radio, Black Talk Radio would do that. You know, maybe this is, you know, maybe this is, you know, I mean, like, yeah, I'm sure that I, you know, like, I'm not so much concerned about in my family, but I have white friends that probably get a little uncomfortable hearing conversations like this. Well, I've had a lifetime of being uncomfortable hearing their conversations. So, you know, if anything, it should be able to broaden the scope of our understanding of each other, right? I mean, right?
Hey.
You know, where's the applause? Anyway, yeah. So, go ahead, man. So, Adam, what's up, man?
Hey, how you guys doing?
Are you serious?
you okay, though?
How are you? Well, just fine. How are you?
I am doing excellent.
Yeah.
Oh, this was
no,
the
but
proper
Bill,
intro.
I sent you that link about the fight in the New Jersey Mall.
Okay.
It was two kids.
Excuse me for not having gone to look at it yet, but I'm kind of occupied right now. But go ahead.
What are you doing, a podcast or a radio show or something?
Yeah, man. What nerd? Yeah, good stuff.
Oh, that's cute. Oh, look at that.
But it was two kids at the mall, and from all the articles that I've read, there was a black kid who was defending another kid from being bullied by a white kid. And in the video, the white kid had his finger all up in the black kid's face, and he pushed him. So the black kid retaliated, and they ended up fighting. And then the cops came in. They pushed the white kid down on a couch, and he just sat there. And the black kid, they had him on his stomach. They had his knee, their knee on his neck. They handcuffed him.
Yeah, they did their usual move. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Yeah.
And it was just one of those things, like, what the hell's going on, which is, unfortunately, the norm for us.
Yeah, but see, that's our point. It's not what the hell's going on. We know what the hell is going on. Why do we keep saying that? It's no longer the question. It's the exclamation point. And we haven't gotten to the place of the exclamation point yet in our conversations with each other. It's like, what the hell is going on, and what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
It's past all that other rhetoric, but I remember a time when I was working in Mercy Hospital on the south side of Chicago as a counselor, working in the loony bin. Well, not really a loony bin, but a treatment facility for alcoholics and drug addicts. Yeah, a loony bin, and one of the patients, decided that I had answered the phone and had gone against everything about what we're trained not to do in answering the patient's phone and giving out any information. This guy decided that I told his people he was there, and he concluded because they described my voice and they said, yeah, it had to be him. Not another patient. It had to be me. Okay. So, man, look, I apologize that you feel that way, but it ain't got nothing to do with me. So I turned my back, and the dude pushed me. Now, I got one or two things to decide at that point. And the professional in me said, okay, I think it's code. I don't remember what it is. It's code, whatever it is. And I had one of the nurses, and that means security is going to come up. Now, I'm dressed in my suit. And there ain't no patients on our ward dressed any other way other than looking like a patient. I'm dressed in my suit. It's very apparent. And I'm the one in charge. It's on a Sunday. So I'm also the one in charge on the unit at the time. And so the Mercy hit squad busted up in there. And so right away, they want to ask what's going on. But they don't ask me what's going on. They ask everybody else, including the patient. So they push me in another room to contain me while the patient is walking up and down the aisle screaming and hollering the injustice that I just committed. And they kept me in this room until my time was up, my shift was up. And, then I was let go of to go, okay, you can go now. So we have staff meetings, during the week. And the next staff meeting was scheduled for Wednesday, so I stayed cool up until then. And the staff meeting was just about coming to an end. And the director said, so I understand we had a little disturbance on Sunday, but, there's always two sides to every story. Well, of course, that's when I snapped. That's when I freaked. That's when all that bullshit inside of me for all the years that I've been dealing with this, what's up? What's wrong? Came out of me, and of course everybody huddled into one corner. Ooh, do we need to call security?
There you go. Troublemaker. Yeah,
where was it that Artie made the comment that she made? I don't know. I lost it. I lost that thread. The sickness of this behavior is what is the norm for white people and their thinking. Blaming the victim is not a new story. So, whether it's the kids in the New Jersey mall, whether it's JP's dad being tasered, it's like, yeah, we got a new weapon to use against you. It's not quite as lethal as a gun, but, it'll disable you, and we can just about do what we want to do with you anyway, and it's even more fun because you're still alive and kicking. ain't no fun kicking a dead body. You know, until we start looking at it that way. Okay, let me shut up.
Well, I'm out of control. It's like the Juwan Howard fight.
Well, I don't know about that because we don't know all the details yet.
Well, what details do we need to know? You know, the brother went off.
I don't think it's fair to drag him
into this debate. You know, I mean.
Well, no, but he went off because the other coach, when they're shaking hands at the end of the game, he didn't get off the bench fast enough for everybody else, and then he stopped them from walking down the line.
I don't think that's
I just don't think it's fair to drag that situation into what we're talking about right now. You know, I mean, like, okay. And I'm saying that because we're talking about something that has happened since black captivity. I'm sorry, Negro captivity in America. You know, Negro. Yeah, and why is it that Negro, just like black, you know, is only capitalized to the whims of the writer? You know, I mean, like Negro was capitalized once it was recognized as being a race, okay? But still, people chose based on their own attitude to either capitalize it or not. Black was capitalized because it was the derivative of Negro, which, again, was reflective of the race. But still today, depending on the writer's choice, black is either capitalized or not. So you know, it's this kind of mentality that, you know, comes down to a question that why I don't feel like it's fair to bring Brother Howard into this one. I think that's another debate or another discussion for another show, you know, as far as the behavior of, you know, but then we have to talk about Bobby Knight, you know. But anyway,
yeah, no,
you know, and the question all too often is, you know, when will they learn? But see, that ain't the question. The question is, when will they unlearn? You know, and that's where the issue in American society is. What has to be done for these folks to unlearn, you know, this assumed behavior that they absolutely don't have to attach any consciousness to? They can do it because they can. And it's their own system that gets to decide how harsh or how lenient it's going to be when judging them. You know, Artie said justice is designed, you know, for just us, you know, and in the meantime used for just them. So, I'm off the rails, man.
And unfortunately, you know, we have to wait and hold our breath to see what happens with Juwan Howard. Even with Juwan Howard's situation, you know, I just wanted to just jump in on that. You know, I think the big difference is that, you know, he's black, but you're black. You know, you're not supposed to do that. You're not supposed to act in that way. You know, I know you don't want to get into that, but I just wanted to touch on that for a minute. You know, because we can analyze and talk about how the other coach touched him and all this other stuff. But yeah, we'll just have to let's see what happens.
Yeah.
You know, and then we could, you know, address it at another night. But I mean, coaches.
Let me just say this real quick in defense of myself. Where I'm coming from is that a coach has his or her own responsibility to who they're coaching, you know, and so how they coach is reflective to me or should be reflective in their behavior. But they have a little different issue going on. You know, they're a coach, you know, and therefore there is an element of what comes with coaching that is supposed to be conducive of their training toward those who they're coaching. So to me, that would need to be another conversation to the point of asking, so when does a coach breach his ethical boundary? You know, and is the treatment of a black coach the same as the treatment of a white one? That's why I said we'd have to bring Bobby Knight into the issue, you know, or, you know, like, you know, the comparative reactions of coaches under different circumstances. You know, and then, you know, we would have to also weigh, you know, the discrepancies of how they're dealt with based on the same behavior. I just think But, you know, I get what y'all saying. I get it. And so let me just
keep my But at the end of the day, you're still a man, regardless of your position. And you may be held in a higher esteem or maybe held to higher standards because you're a coach. But at the end of the day, you're not going to challenge my manhood.
Well, I don't. I mean, you would probably have to change that to, just human, being human, because there's plenty of women coaches also. You know what I'm saying? But it's still being a leader, being a coach, being responsible. I mean, and even I may be stretching a little bit, but even going back to our original discussion and talking about what happened with Kim Potter and Dante Wright, Kim Potter's 26 years in the field, trained people, been training. In a way, she's like a coach, right? You know, she's like this leader, you know? So then there's the question of, again, accountability as a leader, as somebody that trains and leads others. So, yeah, in the end of the day, you're still a man, as you said, but there's still a matter of making the correct decision in order for no conflict. And especially if you're leading, like in his case, you're leading other people. You don't want them to get caught up in the fray. That's what happened with Potter. That's what happened with Howard. I know it's a bit extreme, but that's how I see it. You know, as a leader,
I don't think it's extreme at all.
As a leader,
I don't think it's extreme at all. I'm just taking a breath, man. You know, I mean, like maybe I should have muted my phone, but this one got me cranked up. You know, I need to breathe. So, man, it's like quarter after, we've gone well into overtime. So, Adam, Jay Pastor, man, y'all really, Artie, you know, I see Sue's out there. She's hanging in there with us.
Hey.
We're always going to light the fire under you.
Yeah, sorry, well, this, brother, I've been dealing with this for 75 years, man. You know, and I'm just in the middle of, you know, my generation is just in the middle of what was and what is becoming. You know, we're in the middle of seeing the culture, you know, evolve. You know, my generation is like in the middle of where it's evolved from, and then we're seeing where it's evolving to, you know, and most of those who were, I mean, like I got a 107-year-old aunt. I know Ray, you know, Ray's wife has a 102-year-old, 105-year-old aunt. So, you know, like more of the exceptions than the realities. I look at, you know, my generation and I have more people who have gone than who are still here. I'm starting to think those who I know, you know, outnumber those in heaven, outnumber those on earth, you know, so, but my generation, I think, is right in the hub, right in the middle of what was, how it evolved from there to where it is and where we're seeing it becoming. And it's a hard consciousness to hold on to without reacting to, even in the dialogue, even in the impatience, even in the expectations, you know. And there's not an avenue of that doesn't touch me in some level by being, you know, a black man in America, you know, whose persona, whose sexuality, whose depth, you know, is still a mystery, you know, to America. And therefore, how could we as a people not still be a mystery? And I'm not liking how I'm seeing us respond to that mystery. That's a little bit unsettling for me. Yeah.
But our generation isn't going to learn unless we hear from you guys or your generation
isn't going to learn unless your generation is willing to listen. And this is the point of conversation, and that's what's not happening. You know, you can't have a conversation with someone where one ain't talking.
Yeah,
you know, and anyway, you know, and there's just a, I don't know, there's some kind of invisible wedge. I don't know what it is, but it's like, nah, that's, you know, that's how y'all did it. That's what y'all were about. That ain't, you know, we hip, we whatever, we drip, whatever it is that y'all say. You know, I don't know. But it's like, you know, it's almost like we can't have a conversation because our languages are different. You know, and I look at the devices that, you know, like y'all have available to you that should increase conversation, but it doesn't. It's very closed and selective how y'all use the devices you have. You know, I don't know. Half the time I try to read text messages, whether it's through the phone or on Facebook or whatever, and half the time I don't, with all the damn abbreviation, I don't know what the hell is being said.
So, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we're talking about, you know, and looking at these generation gaps, these differences, Adam, you know, Dad is, and I still have, and I've seen letters that people, you know, people used to write letters and put them in the mailbox, and that's how they communicate.
Yeah.
You know, I think, and I know it sounds like, oh, he's being facetious, but no, seriously, we have to remind people sometimes, like, we got pen and paper, like we remind you at the beginning of every show, pen and paper, and he wrote letters to people, and they wrote back, you know, but now, you know, anyway, I think that's something worth noting, you know?
We
send Christmas cards, maybe, you know, but that'd be about it, you know, or wedding invitations or what have you, but...
But your guys' show is so important because it brings those generations together to have.
Well, I don't know how important it is. You know, based on attendance, it don't seem to be that damn important.
You know, we spend
most of our time. Will and I spend me and Will spend most of our time from week to week begging people to tune in, just to get comments, just to get feedback. You know, we ain't concerned. We support each other, so we ain't looking for support. We ain't, you know, we're begging for response. We're begging for dialogue. We're begging for, you know, commentary and feedback. Yeah, we, you know, that's the only way an audience grows. And it's not, but you know, I don't think I'm overspeaking my boundaries here. It's not for our own glorification. We want to see our people come to life again in the healthy debate, you know, and not have to, you know, not have to deal with, you know, these restraints that we impose upon each other for fear of fill in the blank. You know, I mean, I'm kind of used to, you know, getting on people's nerves. I kind of have accepted the fact that as soon as I open my mouth, everything is at risk. You know, I've refused to train myself to keep my mouth shut. You know, failures called marriages that I've had in my life, there's one constant that I heard, you just don't know when to shut up. And I don't, and I admit it. Yeah.
But I think our generation need to have that no fear attitude.
As long as there's no fear about each other. You know, to me, this is the whole point of conversation. So we can eliminate or at least address the fear that we have for each other. I am terrified of y'all's generation. You know, I cow down in a minute. You know, a stare, a look. You know, anything that even gives the appearance of a bull rush or whatever, you know, I back off in a heartbeat. I'm too old to take that bullshit on. You know, so whether it's coming from brothers or sisters, as soon as I hear it, I'm done. With my generation, you know, we are decrepit anyway, so we ain't got nothing left but conversation. Because, you know, like if we're 10 feet apart, hell, by the time we get to the other person, we're going to forget what the issue was. You know, it's like, man, I'm terrified of y'all. And I'm not ashamed to admit that. I just wish your generation was ashamed to hear it. You know?
And just me personally, I'm terrified of your generation because your generation is going to tell me or my generation how how much we've messed up because we care too much about what everybody else thinks. And we don't want to hear the reality. We don't want to hear the hard truths. We want to just float on and everything's perfect. Everything's, you know, unicorns and rainbows.
I can't speak for your generation. I can only speak for mine, and that's my point. And until we have the active conversation, how are we going to know? I have my suspicions, though, you know, and my suspicions are based on degrees of spoiledness, you know, and I think what has happened is, you know, we've kind of reversed ourselves, my generation. When your generation, when you were shorties, were actively in pursuit of our approval, I think it somehow is flipped now. And now as we get older, your generation is mine, we find ourselves seeking your approval. You know, and there's something wrong with this equation without a healthy dialogue. How did we get here? How is it that our history is limited to one generation separate from the other? You know, I talk in terms of the things that I was raised by. You know, y'all talk in terms of the things that you're living right now. You know, and it's like, how do we bridge that gap of understanding historically? It's almost like y'all think like civil rights is ancient history. This has happened within my lifetime. You know, these issues, you know, like by many in my generation, because I wasn't active, let's say, in the first March on Washington, or I wasn't a ground pounder, like belonging to one of the active movements. Somehow I wasn't relegated to the front lines. Every black person born of the 60s was on the front lines. It's just that we were on the front lines wherever our consciousness was being disturbed. You know, yeah, I was middle class, high yellow, you know, young black dude, hip, big fro, raised Catholic. You know, but everything about the identity we were seeking, I was on the front lines in pursuit of it as much as the next person. It's just that I chose my lines to be more through verbal conflict than physical conflict. And I've never gotten over feeling a little bit like a coward for that. Yeah.
Very, very powerful, family. Very powerful. Well, ladies and gentlemen, the dad, Adam, everybody going to have to go ahead and bring this to an end for tonight. And as dad says, we just got to land this airplane, unfortunately, because I feel like I can fly for another hour, man. This is awesome. Maybe it's, you know, tomorrow is the 22nd. So, you know, I had to throw in some twos real quick before we go, you know, so tomorrow is February 22nd, 2022. And it's 22 is a lot of twos. So I just wanted to share this with you all. And this, you know, it's a powerful show, man. It's a lot of things going on. And I know, Adam, you know, one of the things that Dad and I love about doing this show is, again, the opportunity to talk about these differences with our generations.
Yeah.
And to try to have these healthy dialogue discussions and stuff like that. Yeah. Not only with each other, but with everybody else, too.
Jay Pastor still out there?
I see he's still connected.
Yes, sir. I'm here.
All right. Well, thank you, man. Okay. That's all I wanted to sneak in.
Let me just put this in real quick. I just want to put out this, you know, happening with the 22. The number 22 brings the attributes of a number 2 appearing twice. It relates to your divine life, purpose, and soul mission. Your divine powers are urging you to take better care of yourself. There are opportunities surrounding you now. 22 is a number of power and accomplishments and a sign of new beginnings. So I hope that you all enjoy your new beginnings. Take care of yourself as always. Wednesday will be live 7 p.m. Central Standard Time. This is the Greenhouse Effect Radio Show, an opportunity to provide and exercise critical thinking, experience a renewed self-awareness, and maybe even a deeper connection to others and their experiences, especially when we share interpretations and our feelings. So again, I'm Will Green and Daddy O. You have a good night. Adam, yep. JP, everybody, thank you all for all your comments and everything. And we'll holler at y'all.
Good night, everybody. Yeah.
Wednesday night.
Yeah. 20 seconds.
Amen.
Amen.
I can't remember why I'm feeling this way. I guess I should be crying, but my heart just won't obey. If you say to be happy as I lie here on the rooftop in the rain, I say